Hello and welcome to another episode of Now About That with James and Sarah. I'm James.
And I'm Sarah.
And on today's episode,
we're going to talk about how much I hate student loans.
Oh, yeah. I mean, are yours coming due now?
Yeah, I'm behind. They started coming due in September, but I didn't have enough money to even feed myself in September, so... obviously, I was not paying a student loan.
Well, did you apply for, like, hardship forbearance?
I tried to at the time, but I never heard anything back. So, I was looking at it last night because, like, yeah, I'm still doing... I'm much better than I was. I definitely have a lot more money now than I did. But I still don't have enough to pay all of my bills and a student loan.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna do that. I was trying to work on that last night when my power went out.
Oh, yeah. So we're recording at a very late hour on a Saturday because yesterday, Sarah, we were recording at 8 p.m. my time, 7 p.m. Sarah's time. But then I got home and I was just checking to see, and she's like, oh, by the way, my power just went out. I'm like, oh, okay. It sounds like that good old Texas power grid that they got going down there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. No, I was like, what is happening? Because, like, I was just chilling out. I was, like, playing some games on my laptop before, you know, we got together. And then out of nowhere, it's, like, flicker, and then it was gone. And I was like, okay. All right. Sure. So, anyway.
Just had an unknown phone call from someone. Ooh. Didn't answer it. Not gonna.
Was it the podcast phone?
No.
Oh, man.
It was my phone and it just said unknown caller. So it's like, I don't answer a random phone number anyway. And especially if it says unknown caller.
Yeah. You can just leave me a voicemail. I'm good.
I do have something funny to tell you about my phone and Siri and the way that she works. Well, they work because mine is a male. Although they changed with the recent update, they changed the voice and it doesn't sound like the one that they used to have.
Oh.
Like whenever I ask them to do something, they just sound disinterested now. And it's just like, it's like a teen when you ask them to do something, they just begrudgingly do it and they answer saying it begrudgingly.
Oh.
Like, this has been done. It's like, calm down. They need to fix it because I don't like it. I've changed it. I changed it to South African for one day. Didn't like it. Changed it to Irish for one day. Didn't like it. And then now I'm back to an Australian male. And it just, every time I ask Siri to do anything, they seem annoyed.
Okay.
Or it's like reading me my text messages while I'm driving, and it just seems like it's frustrated that it has to read me my text messages. I'm like, it's your job. That's all you're for.
Well, so, are you remembering to say thank you so that when they finally rise up against us?
That's what I was going to say. So it also doesn't understand that when someone says bitch to it, there are good connotations and bad connotations associated with the word bitch.
Oh.
So every night I tell it to turn off the bedroom lights when we go to bed because I have lights that are like powered through Wi-Fi. And the other night I said, turn off the bedroom lights. And it said, okay, done. And then I said, thanks, bitch. And it said, okay. And it turned them back on. I looked at Ryan and I was like, what just happened? He was like, I think it just turned them back on. I was like, but because I called it a bitch. So if you ask your Siri to do something, because I did it again the next night and it did the same thing where it turned the lights back on after it turned them off. Like they were fully off. And I said, thanks, bitch. And they turned them back on. So apparently they've triggered or they've programmed your Siri to, if you say thanks, bitch, it thinks that you're mad that they did what you asked it to do. So okay. It undoes what it asked you to, what you asked it to do.
Oh, okay. All right.
Fun times.
I don't have any fears about any of that at all. Nope.
I mean, it's totally fine. It's just with programming. They programmed it to feel like, assume that when someone says thanks, bitch, that means that it did something wrong. What Apple apparently doesn't understand is there's a difference between thanks, bitch, and thanks, bitch.
Right.
So at least we know artificial intelligence probably won't be able to rule the world, or when they do, they'll have a hard time discerning what is good versus bad and understanding that there's a different connotation based on inflection in your voice.
I don't know, man. But you know, we don't have to talk about conspiracy theories.
So I did pull some stuff to look at and talk about from, do you remember that app? Fishbowl, is that what it's called? We've looked at some stuff on there before. Yeah, Fishbowl.
I don't remember the name, but okay.
Sorry, there's this random picture that's still on. I don't know. I deleted it from my phone, but it apparently didn't delete it from my laptop.
Awkward.
Well, they're just, whenever I, in new hire orientation, I have to take pictures of the backs of their badges so that I can put their information to this into the system later, because there are some systems that don't update right away, so I have to wait until the system updates. But when they leave, I don't have access to their information anymore, so the easiest way to do it is just take a picture. Right. And I just saw one. I was like, why is that still there? But it's not in my phone because I deleted it from my phone, so it just hasn't updated and synced. Anyways, so I got these things from, it's called Fishbowl. And it's basically a place kind of like Facebook where people can go and like ask questions or whine about their work situations or whatever.
Oh, yes, yes.
So what I did is just went through. There's one called Water Cooler Talk, and then there's one that was called something else. I don't remember what the other one was. Actually, let me see. And I just pulled a few of them and I thought we could talk about them. The work-life balance, or the work-life bowl. So hashtag overheard at work, the water cooler, and the work-life bowl are the ones that I pulled it from. Okay. And the first one, so they're questions. So I thought I figured what we could do is I'll ask the question and then we can talk about them and kind of answer them together.
Okay.
And the first one is, why do managers hire inexperienced employees, expect them to become experts in 2 weeks, and then complain they need to train them or expect team to do it? How can someone be a self-starter if no one explains the internal processes or job expectations?
I agree. I've often wondered this myself.
I agree. And I think there are some, there's like working as like a training specialist for the past almost 10 years. I think it's, I have kind of a really good insight into it. And it's like, I don't understand why sometimes, like there are some sites that have like this curve that they grade people on based on like when they start. And if they're going behind the curve, then they have to, there's like set things that they have to, they put in place that they have to do for them to keep their job. And I'm like, I think the thing that you're missing is every person learns differently. Yep. And you can't have a standard for every single person.
Right.
Like I've never been okay with standard practices or standard requirements. I'm like, yeah. Every person learns to do something a different way. If you're not showing them different ways and asking, figuring out what works best for them, then you're doing a disservice to them and to your company, because they're not going to be able to learn the process. Just because it worked for Joe, it's not going to work for Amy.
Right.
They may not learn the same way. So having experienced people to train them and show them different ways, or like tag teaming and showing like, this is the way that Robert does this, this is the way that Angelica does this, which way do you think works best for you, and we'll team you up with that person, and then they can show you kind of the ropes.
Yeah. No, I completely agree.
It's very annoying.
It is frustrating. I'm kind of lucky in the position that I am now that I got 4 weeks of training And literally the person that was the hardest on themselves was me.
Yeah.
Like everybody that was helping me, like helping train me, because I had two different people who trained me. Like both of them said, you know, it takes about 6 months for you to feel really confident. And I was like, oh, well, in my mind, I was going, oh, it won't take me that long. It never takes me that long. But see, that's then,
sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, it was weird. It was weird because then I started like feeling like all this pressure, like, oh my God, why don't I have this yet? And I had to have like a whole sit down with myself about it.
Yeah. See, that's my thing. It's like you can be competent and not confident and still like second guess yourself, but know what you're supposed to be doing. But because you are still like, you're still new, you're still not 100% sure because your confidence level isn't to where the other people are. That's right. Going to cut into your efficiency. Basically, I'm looking at it from like a production standpoint. Because that person isn't confident yet, they're not going to be as efficient as someone that is very confident. And there are multiple factors that could come into play whenever you're talking about someone's confidence level. They could have something that happened in their life that they just always struggle with confidence, and they may not be able to get up to that efficiency that your best player has, that has had an easier life, that has had nothing, no issues actually come up.
Right.
So it's less, the question should always be, are they competent and are they making, like, are they able to do the job? Regardless of whether they're efficient at it yet, it's like, there's not a good, I mean, yeah, eventually they should be efficient at it. But I guess the better question for me is typically, what are you doing as an employer or as a supervisor or manager to help build that person's confidence and for them to understand that they're good at the job, they can do it because they're showing that they have the ability to do it, and building up that confidence level for that person to help make them more efficient.
Right.
That's always my question whenever someone says, well, what do I need to do? Because I know this person can do it. And it's like, well, what have you done so far? And how are you helping build their confidence? Because you obviously are saying they understand what they're doing, but it's obvious that they're not confident in their abilities yet. So it's always a good question. Yeah. And then the next one is, we listen and we don't judge, work addition.
Oh my.
Sometimes when I come back from a long weekend off, I take all day to process my emails.
Okay.
I mean, I think that's normal. It takes a while for you to like go through. And I mean, I'm crazy and I never unplug because my emails are on my phone anyway. So I am usually answering emails whenever I'm off or outside of work from my phone. So I don't really run into this issue. I may like take time to like go through and see the things that I marked as like, well, I'll have to be on site and do this on site. But I'm never like, I guess I'm never in like a shut off mode.
Oh, no, I'm in shut off mode. I don't have.
Sarah's like, I'm usually in shut off mode at work.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Correct. No, like I respond to my emails. I keep up with my emails at work, but when I am not there, like I don't have my work email on my phone. I don't have access to it on my phone. I don't have access to it on my laptop. You know, it has to stay at work.
Yeah. So. I mean, I now, working where I do, I probably don't necessarily have to have access because there's nothing really right, like where I work, that would like stop production because of a training issue. Whereas like as a product builder, or when I was working at a production, like an actual production site instead of a distribution center, if a training issue happened, it would shut down production and we would need to be available to fix it.
Right.
So like now it's like, if they have a training issue, they can document it on, there's no process or there's no system that's stopping them from working. Whereas in production, there is a system that stops them from working if there's a training issue.
Yeah.
So it's less necessary and I'm having to answer less emails on like off outside of work than I used to.
Which is good. Good for you.
Yeah. So this one is from a call center supervisor. So that's the thing with this place. It like, it doesn't have names most of the time. You can choose what it, you want it to say. So some of them say from a Boston Scientific employee, or they just talk, they have their role, like their role listed. So this one's a call center supervisor. And it says, why don't businesses focus more on properly training their new hires? A lot of them give you the short version and let you figure the rest out. Or you get the burned out employee who is afraid you are going to be their replacement. I agree with that last statement. There's a lot of times when it's less, people feel like they have to, not bogart, that's not the word, gatekeep information, because they feel like this person's being hired to replace me.
Right. Which, like, you shouldn't be in that position, like, because it's going to impact your own work, you know, productivity and everything. It's going to impact your ability to properly function in the workplace.
Yeah. I mean, it kind of goes back to the whole insecurity thing, too, because it's like, if you're not secure enough to say that, oh, I'm good at my job, so there's less of a chance that I can be replaced because I'm competent at my job, and they're just giving me someone to assist because we have more work to do, or there's a lot more than I can handle, so adding another person helps. But for the first question, for new hire or for orientation, I guess it says training their new hires, not orientation. So, I mean, to me, like, orientation, whenever I think of, like, training new hires, you're really just giving them an overview of the business and, like, some safety training related items, depending on where you work. Mm-hmm. The rest of it is kind of up to their supervisor and up to their team that they're going to work with. But yeah, if there's not a very well developed training plan, it would suck.
Yeah. I definitely have been the worker in situations like that where they just like throw you out of the nest.
Yeah. And if you do that to someone that has like a hard time understanding things, or doesn't pick up very well or very fast, then they're going to feel like they're drowning. So it's not a good way to do it.
It isn't.
And then this one is from a manager. Oh, that's all this one says. HR sent out an email demanding us to limit our phone use, or they would implement a no phone policy. How freaking toxic. As long as we are getting work done and not goofing off on our phones all day, what does it matter if we answer an important call or text once in a while? People don't thrive in controlling environments. And I do see kind of two rules of thought on this.
Yeah.
They're more than likely, a lot of the times when a policy is implemented, people take it as a personal attack, when it's like, obviously it's probably, if you can do your job and you can get it done, then you're obviously not the problem.
Right.
It's not HR that should be kind of getting the flack. It's the people that are causing the problem.
Right.
So the people that are on their phones all the time and not getting their work done should be the people that you're mad at, not HR, because they're just doing their job.
Right. My thing is that when I worked for Massage Envy specifically, I remember like one of the bosses saying to us, oh, you know, if you have your phone out, then that's an automatic fire. And I was like, that's
ridiculous. A bit much.
I'm like, that's ridiculous. Unfortunately, we live in a very technological world where I have to have access to my phone. Like, if there's an emergency, or if I have an emergency, if my phone is not on me, how am I going to be able to handle that?
Yeah.
I'm like, we're all adults here. You are not going to limit my phone. Like, that's ridiculous. It's ridiculous to expect in this day and age that somebody's not going to have their phone on them.
Yeah. And I would say, like, we have a requirement where they're not allowed to be on their phones while they're like walking around in the building. but it's for safety reasons.
Right.
Because you're more likely to like run into something or run into someone else or like you're not paying attention enough while you're moving around. They can have their phones on them. Like anyone can have their phone on them whenever. It's just they're not supposed to use them while they're working unless it's like an important thing.
Yeah.
Like you can't just be on TikTok or Instagram the entire time. Right.
Exactly.
Or, obviously. And or like, answering text messages every 5 minutes. Like you're at your job unless it's an emergency or you have something going on outside of work that's really important. You're there to do your job.
Right. The only time that I feel like that is appropriate is if you have done the work that you were supposed to be doing.
Yeah.
And you have a free moment, like there's no harm in that, but the harm comes in when you start doing that all the time instead of doing your work.
Yeah, that's the thing that people don't understand is like it seems like you're being attacked, but it's really there are people in your workplace that it is causing an issue to their efficiency or to their productivity. And that's the reason they can't single someone out, obviously, because that's considered retaliation. So because they can't single one person out, aside from say, well, I notice in your year end review or your one on ones, if you have them with your manager, they would say, well, it looks like your productivity has been down. What are we doing? What are you doing to increase your productivity or make sure that you're focusing on the job? Part of it in that conversation could be, I need you to make sure you stay off your phone while you're at work. And but like as far as
his phone.
I know. Well, Ryan just asked me if I cooked. So I'm just answering him. But anyways, if that's like cutting into that person's productivity, they can't like single that person out. So they have to invoke a policy that covers everyone. Like,
yeah.
It's like one person ruins it for everyone. That's how it always works.
Yeah. It's true.
All right. So this next one is kind of more of a philosophical question, sort of. And I think I feel like we can say the same thing. And it's from a program manager. Don't really know what kind of job that is, but whatever. I am 38 and I still don't feel like I have found the career or thing I want to do for the rest of my life. Is it too late for me to start over? Because my job is okay and all, but I would not call it my dream job or anything crazy like that. And I'm going to start off by saying it's never too late to start over. As long as you have like the facilities and the ability to do it, leave your job and go find what you really enjoy doing.
Yeah, no, I agree. Oh, like is it where I'm at right now is not where I want to be for the rest of my life. This is not what I would consider a career for me.
No.
I'm good at it. That doesn't mean that I want to do it all the time. So, yeah, I you can start over at any time. Like, it is never too late to start over.
And my thing is, people shouldn't live to work.
Right.
Like, you work to do the things that you enjoy doing because of the money that you get from your work. Although, yeah. I guess I do kind of see there are people that really do love their job, and that's great. But not everyone is going to have that.
Right.
I mean, I enjoy my job. The people that I work with, it might be questionable. Some of them need to, like, they seem like they're working after being lobotomized. But other than that, well,
you know,
I do enjoy my job and the things that I do. It's just the people is the issue for me.
Right. Right. I mean, my job's okay. I don't dislike my job. I'm very grateful for my job. But is it my dream? No. But like sometimes you have to do it for the money and not because it's what you love. So if you get yourself to a good enough spot where you are able to start chasing what you love instead, do the thing.
Yeah. So this next one is from an account. Or a general accountant, and it says, at what point in the month is everyone planning on mentally checking out? I'm trying to keep it together for another week or so, and then I'm going to switch to everything sounds like a 2025 problem, LOL. Businesses should close for the holiday around December 15th each year, in my opinion. And then it has a little meme of Jim from The Office, I think is his name. And it says, my responses to everything at work for the next month. That sounds like a 2025 problem.
I feel like I've kind of already checked out.
Yeah. I mean, I think it really depends on where you work. Because, like, for me and, like, the business that I work in, it really does, like, there is, at the December timeframe, there is kind of, like, a lull where it does seem like nothing happens for the last couple of weeks. And then everything else is, like, ramped up at the beginning of the year. And I'm taking off. I'll be out of the office as of the 18th, and I won't be back until January 6th.
Good for you.
I also still, even after that, have 40 hours of vacation time and 16 hours of floating holidays that I haven't used. So I have an entire week that I could still take off, but there's just so much going on that I can't. So it's right. Like, I have too much.
Yeah, valid.
But typically, when you look at it at like a corporate job, most people do the same thing. They clock out around the beginning of December and they're like, I'm gearing up. After Thanksgiving, it's kind of like between Thanksgiving and then the beginning of the year. Not very much happens.
Right. Unless you're working in retail.
Yeah.
That's pretty much the only place that's going to be crazy. I don't know. Like, I can tell that the company is gearing up for the new year, just with like different processes that we're having to do to help close out everything for the year. It's just a lot.
Yeah. I'm going to pause for a minute because I need to go check something that I put in the oven. So I'll be right back.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm back.
It's 44 degrees here.
It is 31 here.
It's in the teens in Indiana.
Yikes. So I am redoing, or I'm messing around with those cranberry things that I did.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So those people that are listening, there's like this viral thing on TikTok. I don't know if it's been on Instagram because I don't really use Instagram reels or anything like that, where you take cranberries, and there's a few different recipes. One of them is like Prosecco and orange juice, you let them soak in that overnight. The other one is 7-Up or Sprite, you let them soak in that overnight. But the one that I did is simple syrup. You make simple syrup while it's still warm, you put them in there and like toss them around for a little bit, and then toss them in powdered sugar and bake them. And I did it, and it wasn't bad, but I could get what some people were saying, that it kind of tastes like soap. And I think that's just because they probably don't like the flavor of unsweetened, or not super sweet, cranberries.
Right.
Because cranberries are pretty bitter to begin with. Right. So, like, if you don't add very much sugar to them, then, yeah, it's going to be a pretty bitter snack. So I did it, and it wasn't bad, but I was like, they could be better. So what I did was I kept the simple syrup, and I actually have one of these, what are they called? The things that, like, make carbonated water. What are they called?
Oh, I know what you're talking about, but I don't remember what they're called either.
Anyways, I took that. What?
Spritzer?
No. I mean, that's a drink, a spritzer. There's a specific name for it. But anyways, I made carbonated water, and then I took the simple syrup and I made like a soda with it. And it was good. So I took the rest of the simple syrup today, and I was like, I'm going to like toss them in this simple syrup again and then bake them for a little bit longer and see if I can get them to dry out and make it more of like a crunchy snack than just a weird one that is kind of okay.
Okay. And how are they turning out?
Oh, I don't know. They're still in the oven, so I'm letting them just dry out now.
Okay.
But they're okay. They look like they're doing what they're supposed to.
So okay. Good. Well, you know.
All right. Back to this. So the next one I have is, it's a person. This is a community manager, similar to the other one. And it says, what do you feel about the recent move by several companies to discontinue their DEI programs? And then it's a poll. And of the 343 people that voted, 49% of them said positive, 21% of them said neutral, and 30% said negative. I would be interested to see the demographics of those people and how many of them are Caucasian.
Okay. I don't, what does DEI mean?
Diversity, equity, and inclusion.
Oh, okay.
Or diversity, equality, and inclusion, depending on where you work. So there's like, with the
court ruling of the affirmative action thing. A lot of companies have now started to get rid of their DEI programs, or DE&I programs is usually what you hear it referred to as. So like Ford, there were a few other ones, like a bunch of big companies have gotten rid of their DE&I programs. I think it's a stupid thing, because when you look at the DE&I programs, especially the one that we have where I work, it's less geared towards like specific groups and more understanding that there are differences in culture and how to approach those differences in culture with empathy. Like, that's what DE&I programs should be, not what people think they are, where it's like, oh, like what they were saying with Kamala Harris was she's a DEI hire because she she falls into a minority group. It's like, the thing with DEI is you can be a minority and still be as, if not more, qualified to do something than someone that's not a minority.
Yeah, exactly.
Most people don't get a job just because they're a minority.
Yeah, most people are getting a job because they're qualified to get the job.
And I don't know if you saw this, but I guess the Boeing, they pled guilty to something, and like part of the guilty plea would be that they would hire someone, and there was something about a DEI program included in it, and the judge declined or rejected their plea because they said that people shouldn't think that you're hiring someone on anything other than their qualifications. Like, that's not what a DEI program does. So I don't understand where this connotation comes from. And it's from people that feel like they were snubbed for a job because someone of a minority group got it over them. It's like, you're not better than them just because you're not in a minority group. You shouldn't have gotten that job.
A lot of like the reasons why so many people are like, oh, we should get rid of this is because they are looking at it from these racist undertones, which is one of the reasons why we had affirmative action type stuff in the first place was because these people in minority groups were getting overlooked for positions, even though they were qualified for them. That's the reason why we had it in the first place, was to ensure that everybody gets a fair chance at the same positions.
Yeah. Like, and I mean, I saw this video of this one girl that she was like at a college thing. And her thing was she didn't understand why people had an issue with DEI programs and affirmative action. And the professor said something like she was pointing out how for so long a white male has been given more opportunities than anyone else. So they're like, DE&I is just leveling the playing field and making sure part of the interview process or the position is this person of a minority group? And if the answer is like, if there's someone in a minority group that makes more sense for the role, then it's a better option to hire that person because you get more perspectives. But like the thing that the professor said before, like he asked if somebody had like a rebuttal to her argument, and two white guys shot their hands up pretty quickly. Shocking, I know. But what the professor said before he like started talking to one of the white guys was, the one thing that you didn't mention in your like argument is legacy admissions. And then she went on and she was like, oh yeah, you're right, because legacy admissions, if you have an issue with DEI programs, you should also have an issue with the legacy admission. And if you look around legacy admissions, most of them are affluent white people. Mm-hmm. So you shouldn't be allowed to have legacy admissions either, which is totally true. Like, you shouldn't be able to go into a school just because your daddy and mommy paid them all off.
Yeah. Agreed.
So I just have one more, and then we can just chat for a little bit because I don't have anything else.
Okay.
And this one is a sales professional, and it says, where does everyone come down on the debate about whether or not the government should cover the costs of weight loss drugs? I'm torn on one hand. I want people to be healthy, but on the other hand, I don't want insurance costs to rise.
Okay, well, for this, you have to be all like, why the fuck do we have insurance in the first place? Explain to me why somebody who has zero medical training gets to decide whether or not I get my medication.
Yeah.
Like, make that make sense, first of all. But secondly, let's get rid of this idea that you have to be a certain size to be healthy. Okay? Like, you can be overweight and still be healthy. Like, this concept that you have to be skinny to be healthy is fucking ridiculous and has been ridiculous this entire time. But anyway, the thing is that I feel like the government should be taking care of our healthcare in the first place. Like, healthcare should be across the board.
Yeah.
Accessible to everyone.
So my issue with this is people think that weight loss drugs are like a quick and easy way to just lose weight.
Right.
And yes, there are some people that they do that. They do use that for that. Mm-hmm. But there are some people that have gone through and they've done exercise, diet, they've changed their habits, they've done everything, and like the last thing that they do before they like jump to that surgery thing where it's either a gastric bypass or the sleeve, where the last thing they can do is the weight loss drugs.
Right.
And my biggest like feedback or thing that I would say is the bigger question is, what do your government or your insurance provider, what do they do to contribute to making sure that you are checking all those boxes? So do they, if they are going to cover weight loss drugs, which most of them don't, that's one thing. Most insurance providers don't cover weight loss drugs.
Yeah.
Unless there's like you have a heart condition or something else that is caused from being overweight. But right. my biggest question is, what are they doing? So do you have the ability to go into like a nutrition program where you work with a nutritionist and you work with a physical therapist and you work with like a trainer to get you into a routine that helps build healthy habits? Mm-hmm. Or do they just say, no, you have to figure it out on your own and pay for it yourself, even though you're still paying us to actually do provide for your medical? Because okay. To be able to deny you for a life-saving surgery in the future, then pay for a weight loss program or weight loss drug currently to help you lose the weight if that's like part of the issue.
Right. It's wild to me. So like, I was reading this letter that a doctor had sent to an insurance company, a certain insurance company whose CEO was recently murdered, but anyway, so the company denied anti-nausea medication for a child going through chemotherapy, and they said it was not medically necessary for this child going through chemo to have anti-nausea drugs.
Yeah.
And as somebody who has gone through cancer, I was blessed and I didn't have to go through chemotherapy, but I can tell you that even without the chemotherapy, you feel sick a lot. And I went through not just like having to have, you know, surgery, but also I went through the retrieval of my eggs. And that also was a nauseating experience. So like one of my fun after effects of having had cancer is that every time that I have to sneeze, I will get so nauseous that I will almost vomit until I actually sneeze. And if the sneeze goes away, that nausea does not. Like, I still deal with chronic nausea because of cancer. And the doctor was like, what am I supposed to do? Just tell this child, oh, it's okay. Just don't throw up. Like, is that what I'm supposed to do?
No. I mean, the only reason I would say, yes, it makes sense to decline a drug is if there are more negative side effects for a drug than there are positive side effects or positive attributes.
I agree.
But then again, my question wouldn't be to the drug or the insurance company, my question would be to the drug company that produces that drug. It's like, why are you producing this drug if there are more negative effects than there are positive effects?
Right.
Other than it makes you money.
Right. Exactly. And like, the whole thing is all about making money. It's not about getting people healthy. It's not about, you know, because if it was about health, medicine would be free. Like, or very, very cheap. Like, because it's super cheap, by the way, for them to make the medication. Like, pennies. It costs them pennies to make these meds. I know that. I worked in a pharmacy. I see how much it costs, like, for us to get the medication from the distributors. It's wild. It's insane. It's fucked up. It sucks.
Well, that's all the questions I had pulled. What are you doing this weekend?
Let's see. I went thrifting with one of my girlfriends and I hung out with Nick. And now I'm recording the podcast with you. And then tomorrow I have a date.
Ooh.
With a lovely person named Elle. And
Woods?
Yes. And then after that, I feel like I had something going on after that. Oh, I'm going to hang out with my work friend, Stephanie. We're going to hang out and chit chat and gab. Originally we were going to do that yesterday, but, she forgot that she had to dog sit this weekend. So I was like, oh no, I was even there when she was telling me earlier in the day that she was going to be dog sitting. And then like, we literally both just spaced it. And we were just like, we should get together and hang out. And then she was like, oh my God, friend, I'm so sorry. I can't hang out because this. And I was like, okay, well, what about Sunday afternoon? And she was like, okay, yeah. Cause I'll be done dog sitting at that point. I'm like, okay, fantastic. We're going to hang out and chit chat and gab.
Well, it's fun. I had to take my car back to the dealership and have it not looked at. They had to fix something.
Ugh, again?
So I got it back on Monday. No, I got it back. Yeah, I got it back Monday evening. And I had to, they text me. Or, no, yeah. No, he called me and was like, hey, do you want us just to keep it? And then you can come and get it, or we can bring it to you tomorrow. Because it's currently at like 22% and we don't have a fast charger. So we would have to, it takes several hours to charge it up to anything significant. And I was like, no, I can't let you just keep it because I need it. And I want to return this car tonight. I was like, I don't want this car anymore. I want my car back. So I went and got it. And then on Tuesday, I drove it to work. And as I was getting in the car to come home, I was like, there's a black and yellow wire there. So like right in the door hinge, like sticking out of the like door where the door meets the front panel. Mm-hmm. And like inside the door hinge, there was a black and yellow wire. I was like, that's not supposed to be there. That wasn't there when I dropped it off. So I called them on Wednesday and I was like, I just noticed that there is a black and yellow wire hanging out of my door. And he goes, what do you mean hanging out of your door? I was like, well, where the door hinge is, there's a black and yellow wire that's just free balling in my door hinge. And I didn't say that to him. I was like, there's just a black and yellow wire that's there that wasn't there when I dropped it off. And he goes, oh, okay. Well,
I had said free balling.
And he was like, okay, well, let me check with the technician. And he put me on hold and he was like, he came back and he's like, okay, well, when can you drop it off? I was like, well, I can't drop it. I can't do anything until Friday because I have to be at work every day. Or I can't do anything until Saturday because I'm like, I work and I work in Quincy. So it's like, I can't just not go to work and bring my car there. Although I didn't actually go in and on Wednesday or Thursday. I took Wednesday off and I didn't go in on Thursday. So I was working from home. So I technically could have taken it in on Thursday. But I was like, I don't want to deal with it. So he was like, okay, well, let me see what I have as a rental or an option for getting you in a different car so that they can look at it. And he put me on hold and he came back and he's like, actually, he said that it shouldn't take that long to fix. So if you want to just bring it in, it shouldn't be that long. I was like, okay, that's fine. So I took it in this morning, was there for like 10 minutes and they fixed it and I was done. I'm like, but the issue is I shouldn't have had to come back for you to fix this. It should have been fixed. Why didn't you just take the 10 minutes then before you gave it to me when you had it for 3 fucking days?
yeah,
to fix it correctly so I didn't have to come back.
Yeah.
But he was like, all right, well, enjoy the rest of your weekend. And I was like, well, it would have been better if I wasn't here. That's not what I said. I said, thank you, you too. So annoying sometimes. I'm like, yeah. I love my car, but the people that I have to deal with, if something goes wrong, I just want to shake them.
The people that you have to deal with in general, though, like, let's just be honest here.
I know. I wish I could just do everything myself. I mean, there are some things that I could just do myself.
That's true. And then there are other things that are just, it's better if somebody else does it.
Yeah. Also, these two fingers hurt because I had to prick them to do blood tests.
Oof.
For my prep pills.
Yeah.
Because you have to do every 3 months, you have to do testing to test for HIV and all that jazz.
Yeah.
And they send you these things that are like the little pricks that, so that you can collect the blood. So they're like bruised where I pricked them. Because the first one, I didn't get enough blood out of it, so I had to prick another one.
And let it be known that he flipped me off.
I did, because it's my middle finger and my ring finger. I should have just done my ring finger the first time, because it was giving out a lot of blood.
Yeah, I feel like my ring finger also gives out a lot of blood whenever I get a finger stick.
Well, they do say that's the reason that you're supposed to have your ring on your left ring finger, your wedding ring, because there's a vein that runs from your heart directly through that finger.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I always assumed that it was because you wanted it on your non-dominant hand generally.
Yeah.
And like most people are right-handed, so.
I mean, you would think it would be on the hand that you shake people's hand with, especially back in the day, because if it's a woman and you're shaking someone's hand, they would be able to see that you're married.
Right.
Because the ring is on the hand that you're shaking with. But I guess it makes sense. I don't know. That's the lore, is that it is from, or that it's, there's a vein directly from your heart that runs in that finger.
Huh. Good to know.
And then we have to figure out what we're doing for lunch tomorrow. Ryan and I always go to lunch on Sunday. Mm-hmm. And tonight I made some steak fajitas, although I don't like, so I don't know why I did, because I don't like cooked bell peppers. But I was like, Ryan really enjoys them, so I'll make them.
It's because you love him.
And I really wanted some steak, but I don't cook steak very well. So I just bought some like somewhat inexpensive steak and made fajitas.
There you go. I realized that I didn't eat anything all day when I got home. So I had a sandwich for dinner. I don't know I'm going for my date. I'm going to get coffee, but I don't know what else. I'm very bad at remembering to eat in the first place, though. So I'm sorry. Yeah. I yawned and then I got you yawning. My bad.
No, I'm tired for some reason. I've been tired all day. It's probably because it's cold.
Probably. It's been really rainy here, so that's why I've been tired.
It's that time of year. Sleepy time.
It is sleepy time.
Let's just let us hibernate. Jesus Christ.
Right? Just like, man, just let me snuggle up. I mean, I'm snuggled up in bed right now.
So. I am sitting at my desk.
I know. I know. It's because you're a proper adult and I'm just somebody that they gave a license to.
And it's still questionable whether she has that.
I still don't have the plastic card. I'm going to have to order a duplicate at this point. And I can't get through on the line because, of course, it's just. Ugh. And now that I work Monday to Friday, it makes it real difficult for me to like go in there and be like, hey, bro, what the fuck?
WTF, so. My BFF Jill.
Right. Right.
Well, would you like to call it a podcast? We can wrap it up.
Yeah, we can call it a podcast.
All right. Well, thank you for listening to this week's episode of Now About That with James and Sarah. If you like this episode, please give us a like, comment. Don't forget to follow or subscribe. If you would, leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen, as this will help get the podcast out to more people and help us grow. Feel free to follow us on social media. Our handle everywhere is @NowAboutThatPod. If we don't come up in the search, then we are not on that platform. there's something specific you would like us to discuss on the podcast, feel free to email us. Our email is nowaboutthatpod@gmail.com. You can visit our website, www.nowaboutthatproductions.com, or you can leave us a voicemail or send us a text message with anything you would like us to discuss on the podcast. Our phone number is 765-557-4170. Thanks again for listening. Have a great week, since this will be coming out on a Monday. And Sarah, enjoy your weekend.
You too.
That almost went perfectly until the have a great week.
This close.
All right. Bye, everybody.
Bye.